Hello and welcome to Leadership Perspective, the official podcast of the Nordic Resistance Movement. This is our 9th episode. My name is Fredrik Weidland, and with me I have, as always, the leader of the Nordic Resistance Movement, Simo Lindberg. Hello.
Greetings.
How are you doing?
I'm actually a little bit tired. It has been a lot of different kind of works lately, but apart from that, I'm in good mood. As always, the morale is high.
Yeah, very good. I'm actually quite tired also. I had a long trip, but hopefully the episode will not be low energy.
No, I think we can endure for, it's not a 5 hour show. We can endure and deliver good anyway, I think.
Yes. And when this episode is recorded on Monday night, I have just returned, actually a few hours ago, from 5-day trip to Germany. And I mentioned this because I want to talk a little bit about the trip to Germany and the demonstration we participated in, organized by our comrades in the Dritte Weg. But also to hint that I maybe not be fully prepared for this episode, as I just got home. Hopefully it will be okay anyway. So activists and members of the Nordic Resistance Movement went down to Germany from Sweden and Denmark to meet our comrades in the Dritte Weg and have time to really socialize with them, exchange ideas, learn from each other and so on. And then to take part in their demonstration in Berlin later on Saturday. And it has been very nice. Good company. We have eaten good German food. We have visited historical places in Germany and so forth. And those of our listeners who listen to Leadership Perspective because you respect the Nordic Resistance Movement, maybe look up to us and want to learn from us, you should definitely also check out their Dritte Weg. They are an organization like us, a fighting organization that fights on the streets, train martial arts, which is revolutionary and which is national socialists or Deutsche Sozialisten. So check them out. The demonstration was there first in Berlin and a bit of an experiment, according to one of the leaders who I talked to. It turned out to be a very well organized demonstration, disciplined. They kept the Antifa away, and the Antifa were quite a few, actually, as they had gathered strength from all over Germany. And also it was very good speeches. Powerful speeches. I myself had the honor of giving a speech on the spot. I talked about the importance of embracing and living the struggle, of building organization made up of idealistic fighters, and that we also should work together across borders, benefit from each other, because the enemy also works globally. I mentioned in the speech that I had previously declared the movement dead in Germany just a few years ago, and that it was Der Dritte Weg, which was started in 2013, that made me change my mind on the movement in Germany. I do not want to go into too much of the speech here now, but when this is broadcast, we may have published the speech in its entirety and can link to it, or maybe we can have it in this episode some way.
Yeah, I think we'll try to put the audio directly after this show. So after the Leadership Perspective outro, we will try to cut it in there somehow.
Yes. This was the first time I gave a speech in English, but I also gave the last part of the speech in German, which is perhaps an even bigger challenge. I did it because I wanted to honor the German comrades and so that I also could speak directly to them without translation. And it was appreciated. Another reason was completely selfish, namely that I wanted to give a National Socialist speech shouting in German in Berlin. So, yes, feel free to read our articles about the demonstration on NordicResistanceMovement.org. There will be several articles in the days, so feel free to check back sometime later in the week as well, or simply make sure to visit our website every day. So that's that. What does Simon Lindberg have to say about all this?
First of all, I'm actually a bit jealous. I was meant to be on this trip from the beginning, but then other things came in between, so I had not the possibility to go. But it sounds from what I've heard on this report, but also what I've talked with you and others outside of this recording, that you had a really, really good trip. And as you say, I have been in Germany before, and I have met with our comrades in Der Dritte Weg several times, and I feel very, very closely connected to them. They are more or less same kind of organization as us. So, and the comradeship is always very warm, very welcoming, very good. And yeah, you actually, when I was there last time, when also you were there, I actually felt a bit spoiled when we were there. We got so much good food and drink and company and everything.
Yes, they are very respectful.
Did you get this raw meat mince this time as we had last time?
Raw, sorry?
Yeah, we got this bread with raw meat on and pepper and onion.
No, not this time, but we got a lot of sausages, which I cannot pronounce. Bretzels, brötchen, good brötchen. It was good food all the way.
Nice. All right. No, but definite salute to our comrades in Der Dritte Weg. We will meet each other soon again.
Yes. And also in this episode, we will talk a bit more about international cooperation. But first, we're moving forward to the next segment, which is what has happened in the struggle since last time. That means from the first week of September to now in beginning of October.
Yes, it has actually been a very, very good month, I must say. It has been a lot of really outstanding and good activities. A total of more than 150 different activities have been carried out in the Nordic countries. Among these, there has been orientation, rappelling, canoeing, martial art training, study circles, but of course also a lot of propaganda activities. The two biggest things of the month that has passed has been the Nordic Days and also an activist campaign around the Jewish holiday of Yom Kippur. And so I will start by talking a little bit more about those two things, since those were the biggest things that happened. And start with Nordic Days then. Nordic Days is, for the listeners who maybe don't know, it is annual tradition that we have during late summer or early fall each year, where comrades are welcome to also bring their families for a nice weekend of social gathering between comrades and their wives and kids and so on. Of course, we have local activities in different regions on a continuously basis where families can meet up and social activities and so on. But Nordic Days is the only bigger activity where we are, where everyone from the whole north is welcome to participate with their families. So it's a very special weekend in that kind of way. And traditionally, also a pentathlon are being held at the Nordic Days, where the winner receives the glorious title Nordic Man of the Year. And this year, except for social gathering and the pentathlon, also we had a bouncing castle and disco for the kids. We had a market where members offered different thing that they have produced themselves to other members. We had lectures by both me and you, Veidland. We had a troubadour, and we had also a name-giving ceremony for some of the youngest kids of our members. And the triathlon this year was won by Martin Saxlind after an, I would say, almost inhumane show-off. He was really, really, really killed all competition, so to say. It was, you can see it in the video we have released from the Nordic Days. You can see some of his, what he accomplished, but it was a really, really, really strong accomplishment of him. And since he is also an enormously dedicated and very, very loyal activist of the movement, he really deserves the title Nordic Man of the Year, I must say. So, except for the great honor of that title, he also won a really nice Viking sword. I definitely believe that all of the kids, and there were quite many kids, we had more kids this year than ever before. I really think they had a really good time at the weekend. It seemed like that anyways. The food was great. The company was great. The market had really interesting stuff. It is starting with the second year now. It is becoming a really good tradition, also the market. The troubadour was good, and the name-giving ceremony was something really, really, really special. We had a total of 8 kids that were name-giving during a special ritual that we had made for this event, but that we will continue to have also in the future. And that is very, very important that we build our own culture, so to say, that we build our own rituals, our own rites to perform within the organization. I will not talk so much more about that now because this is a report, and we probably will have a chance to talk more about building our own culture and rituals in some other episode, some other time. But it went very well, at least. Then we had lectures. You, Veidland, you gave an interesting lecture about structural racism and about actually that structural racism does not really exist, or at least not against non-whites, at least.
It really exists against whites.
Yeah. And I gave a lecture about the importance of us whites being proud of who we are and where we come from and so on. And all in all, I must say it was very, very, very successful weekend. I had a really, really good time, and I've talked with several comrades who also had a really, really good time. So it was really nice, actually.
Yeah, and I think this kind of meeting, it's a quite new thing in Sweden. I know in other countries, some countries in Europe, these sort of cultural activities exist already. But Sweden, it's a new thing. And you know, as I know, that we had other cultural activities planned that we couldn't do this year, but we'll do next year, which will be even greater, even more fantastic event next year. So if you're interested, contact us or read on nordicresistancemovement.org. When you can read when we announce it. It will be late summer next year.
Yeah, and hopefully, because this year we couldn't announce it so big beforehand because of Corona restrictions and so on, but hopefully it will be better with that part next year.
Yes.
Yeah, but I think I had one old member who had been member for many years, and then he had been passive for some years, and then he become a member again. And he said that he saw that the organization is really mature. And this was a really good sign of this weekend, that we are a mature movement and not just some young, angry, white male club, but a really serious and mature movement.
Yeah, and the young, angry, white males are there, but it is a movement of many, many, also families.
Yes, and not least upcoming angry white males were there among the kids.
Yeah, we breathe them.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. A little add-on just for the Nordic days. I want to give a shout-out also to Norwegian comrades that came from Stavanger, that they have published a report on the Norwegian site frihetskamp.net, where they actually, because it is, I think, 9-10 hours from Stavanger to where we were, and they made the trip into a propaganda tour. So they stopped on several places, almost every town from Stavanger to Gothenburg area where we were, and put up posters and stickers and so on. So that's also, yeah, a little add-on. Nice thing to do when you're on the trip anyway. Yes, that was the Nordic days. Then I also mentioned we had celebrated the Israel days, Yom Kippur. And they were actually also heavily celebrated by the Nordic resistance movement in almost 50 different cities, from Reykjavik to Stockholm to Copenhagen. Posters were put up and flyers were handed out that informed the people about different Jewish rituals and Zionist world monger plans, and also had some quotes from their holy scriptures, such as Talmud and so on. So in the propaganda, we didn't put so much values. It was just quotes or simple facts. This is how the Jews celebrate Yom Kippur, or this is what Jews do with circumcision and so on. So even though it got lots of crying Jews to cry much more than they usually do, they didn't like this campaign, I can say. In several of these 50 cities, there was also public activities on the theme. For example, there was a public activity outside of the synagogue in Norrköping in Sweden. There was a public activity outside of the synagogue in Oslo in Norway. And in Oslo, there was also a table put up with bloody diapers on it, actually, symbolizing then Jewish circumcision on young babies. But yeah, I would say that it was a worthy celebration of Yom Kippur from the Nordic resistance movement. If we proceed with the month, two smaller things, but that I think is worthy of mention since they stand out a bit from the ordinary activism, is first one activity outside of Stockholm in Norrtälje, where garbage was collected in the nature. There had been lots of complaints from people living in the area that the politicians do not take care about the trash. So members and activists, they gave nature a helping hand and cleaned up the trash, and then they dumped the trash outside of the town hall together with a message to them stating that since they are trash, they get the trash, and so on. So a double-sided action where we both helped Mother Nature and made propaganda out of it. We have done these activities before, but still they are not so common, so I think it's worthy of mention. It's a nice activity. In Randers, Denmark, they also made a little special activity where they put up a carpeted altar with Stars of David and blood on. And then there was a text about Nordic people being sacrificed in the name of multiculturalism on behalf of the Zionist agenda. So that was also a bit unusual propaganda method, where they used altar that they had carpeted first. They used material in another way than we used to do. And also, of course, this one in Oslo that I talked about outside of the synagogue. However, this activity in Randers were before Yom Kippur. So I guess the Norwegians were inspired by this Danish altar activity. Yeah, I like to see new kinds of activities, and we are always very willing to try new methods. So very good on that one. And then a last really important thing during the month that I want to mention is that the verdict came from the highest court in Finland. And it stated that the Nordic resistance movement should stay banned. We have been banned in Finland for some year or a little more now. but we were awaiting the decision from the highest court, but now it came and they said we should stay banned. They also stated that our symbol is now forbidden in Finland and that it is illegal to be a member of the Pohjoismainen Vastarintaliike. It is the Nordic resistance movement in Finnish. But as a reaction to this verdict, there has been activism all over Finland. Our symbol has been sprayed on several places. Our flag has been raised in flagpoles. Banners have been put up with the text "Support Nordic Resistance Movement" and so on. And also now this weekend, the same day that you were in Berlin and at the demonstration, some autonomous national socialists, they held a square meeting in Tampere where they stood with totally green flags, no symbol on them, just green flags. So I would say that actually there has been more resistance movement activism than before the ban in Finland the last couple of weeks. And this is, of course, the only way you should handle a censorship ban like this. You must show them that it gives no effect. It gives the opposite. It gives gasoline onto our fire. It makes us more angry, more willing to crush their system. But even though this is the way it should be done, I think it is truly inspiring to see. And it really, really warms my heart when I see the Finnish comrades keep on the fight like this. So honor to all Finnish comrades who have participated in these illegal activities the last couple of weeks. They can never stop us. Elekan voittu.
Elekan voittu. And I must say the Tyr rune is now really is a resistance movement symbol in the true sense of the word, actually, in Finland.
Mm, absolutely.
So, like you said, it's illegal to put it up, probably.
Yes, it is. And it's also illegal in Germany, where you were. Then again, in Germany, yeah. Most symbol is illegal.
Everything is banned.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything. Yeah, very good. A busy month. But we move into the next segment, the ideological tactical question. And today we will talk a bit about geopolitics, international contacts, and a united Nordic region, which is one of the Nordic resistance movement's political goals. I was this weekend and demonstrated in Berlin, Germany, with our comrades in the organization Der Dritte Weg. You were yourself in Budapest, Hungary, last year at a demonstration with the Legio Hungaria. In recent years, we have also had representatives on site in Bulgaria during the Luko March and so on. And you've also been demonstrating with Der Dritte Weg. So, and during our events in the Nordic region, we also had participants from non-Nordic countries. So my first question is, does it not go against the idea of a Nordic region when we collaborate with non-Nordic organizations?
No, definitely not. However, it is an interesting question, because this is a quite usual myth among people that are against us, that we should hate everyone and everything that isn't 100% Nordic, or even worse, that we should hate everything that isn't 100% Swedish, even if we are a Nordic organization. But the truth is, however, that actually we do not hate anyone that does not deserve our hate. And to deserve our hate, you have to take an active part against us. And if you do so, you receive our hatred, no matter what race you belong to. And the opposite, of course, we do not hate you just because you are of different race, as long as you do not stand against us. And then, of course, these other white people in Europe are not even a different race. So there is definitely no hate at all. But it is like you talked about when you described what you have talked about in your speech, and that we hopefully will hear later as well here, that our enemies, they work on a global scale and in a more and more borderless world. And that our enemies are working this way strengthens the need also for us to work together to be able to fight these globalists. They have set the plan of the game. As it is right now, we must play the game at their terms, you could say, a little bit. The struggle is not just about Sweden or the Nordic region or Germany or whatever. The struggle is about actually the whole world. So definitely we must cooperate in order to be able to defeat them, to be able to stand victorious in the end.
Could we also cooperate with overseas organizations?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that we could and that we would like to cooperate with anyone around the world that wants to break free from the Jew World Order and that are also seriously organized in their fight to achieve this break of chains. This fight is not even exclusively for white people, because the globalist plans, they will affect everyone on the planet if they succeed with their goals. So this fight concerns everyone, and definitely we should stick together in this fight against our common enemy. The old saying, our enemy's enemy is our friend, is quite suitable. And this together with the mutual respect for each other's peoples and cultures, that gets you a long way. And we are definitely interested in cooperation with overseas allies as well.
Yeah, and does this also apply after our takeover, their Machtübernahme, so that we could cooperate with overseas countries then also?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we acknowledge and believe in every people's right and freedom to live free and independent from others, as long as that freedom does not threaten our freedom or the planet as a whole. And some might connect this with ethno-pluralism, but I would say we are national socialists. We are not ethno-pluralists. We do not care likewise for everyone. We put our own people first in all matters. We put our own people second and third and fourth as well. But we are definitely not imperialists either. I mean, as long as blacks live in Africa, not in our countries, but in their own motherland in Africa, as long as they follow their natural way of life and lives closer to the nature, as they did in the past, before mostly Christians and later on capitalists tried to give their worldview and their society to these people, then we wouldn't mind them at all. And without billions of dollars of aid from white peoples, there wouldn't have been this overpopulation in Africa either. It would have been balanced out by itself. So Africans wouldn't be any problem at all. There wouldn't be any hate at all from us towards Africans, for example, if the world was in a more natural state, so to say. And we could definitely conduct trade and have a cultural exchange with other races as well. And we could definitely have discussions on how to take best care of the world on a global level. You could say like today's United Nations, baby, but separated and independent nations working together and with the uttermost respect of preserving the multiplicity that nature has given us. And this also when it comes to the different human races.
In some countries today, there are conservative nationalist rulers who treat national socialist opposition quite badly, taking Putin's Russia as one example. Could we collaborate with such?
This is a sensitive question, because I mean, to us here in the Nordic countries, Putin or Trump or Orban or many more, they are very interesting signs in time about that the winds and the political climate are changing in the world. These men are definitely not the salvation and the final solution for the Russian, American and Hungarian people. Maybe they're not even a step in the right direction, but they are, and you cannot deny that they are living opinion polls. Their power shows us that white people have had enough and wants a change. People of the day, they want nationalism instead of globalism. And the people love these men because the people believes that they are nationalists that genuinely care about the people, as an opposite to the old political leaders, which they despise more and more, and that with all right. But at the same time, as you say, that these conservative populists are extra hard against the true nationalists, is of course because they feel that they are a threat to their power. I mean, they know that they are not the real deal themselves. They know that they are fake. That at the end of the day, when they are dropping their mask, they are not what the people really want and long for. And therefore, they also strike hard against people that are the real deal. People that could take the power away from them, if the people awakens for real. And with this being said, I definitely understand that Russian nationalists that get put to jail for several years because of their view, I understand that they really, really hate Putin with all of their heart. At the same time, as we in the Nordic countries views Putin as a healthy wind and an interesting character. And this can be problematic, of course, but I hope that everyone understands where I'm going at anyway. I mean, I can say the same thing with Sweden and the Sweden Democrats. I don't know how many interviews I've been with American podcasts or Australian podcasts or wherever I've been, European podcasts, where they have asked me about Sweden Democrats. So I have understood that nationalists in other countries, they view Sweden Democrats as an interesting example, the same just as I watch Putin or Trump as interesting examples. I mean, Sweden Democrats, they are definitely up to no good. And Sweden Democrats, they would probably ban us if they get to power. But they are also interesting opinion polls. They are also a sign in time of what the people wants and that the people are awakening. So I understand that Russians, for example, they feel bad if they see that we talk good about Putin in any way, but they must see it, try to see it at least in a bigger context. We know that Putin is not the savior. We know that Putin is not being nice against the nationalist opposition. And we, of course, support you in the nationalist opposition. But in a global scale, we must also look at people like this that are not openly socialists, globalists, are in power anymore, that they lose their power towards people that at least seem to be more conservative and more nationalist and so on. And with all this being said, to shortly answer the direct question you had, for a short period of time, we could cooperate with a state like this. It could benefit us, definitely. But in the long term, our end goal, our visionary goal, is of course not to keep status go in these countries either, but to help the people in that these countries to break free for real, to help the real nationalist opposition, of course.
How important do you think cross-border cooperation between nationals will be to reach power?
I believe it is vital. A single nation in the globalized world of today is almost without any power at all. I mean, if a nationalist organization, a real nationalist organization, claims power in a single nation, they will have United Nations against them, they will have European Union against them, they will have the USA against them. And these powers, they will fight this single nation at any cost. So it will be very, very hard.
Yeah, and the NATO also.
And NATO also, yes, absolutely. So it will be very, very, very hard for this single nationalist nation to keep above the surface. But with several countries, several nations awakening at the same time, it will be much, much easier to sustain the power. And it is, of course, not necessary or even thinkable that several nationalist movements will be victorious at the same day. That's not what I'm talking about, because someone, of course, has to be the first one. But what I am talking about is that if one true nationalist organization comes to power at the same time as the nationalist movements in several other countries is really, really strong and growing, and at the same time in other countries there are Trumps and Putins, then it will be much easier to carry on with the nationalist revolution and keep the country free and really make it a nationalist country that would work without having all these globalist forces against them.
Yeah, and it was like that in the 1920s. We had uprisings in Italy, Romania and Germany and other places at the same time. So it was very hard for the globalists and Jews to organize the campaign against them, because there were several countries.
Mm. Absolutely. And I mean, the better cooperation we have between each other, between different nationalist organizations in different countries, the better this effect could be. Because on the way towards victory, while we grow, we will help each other out. Today, it could be about sending some guys from the Nordic Resistance Movement to a demonstration with Adritte Veg as a moral support, as some extra numbers in the ranks. Tomorrow, it could be donating millions of dollars or sending hundreds of people to demonstrations and so on. So, I mean, we must build that cooperation now when we are not so big. Of course, we are growing all the time, and both the Dritte Weg and the Nordic Resistance Movement are definitely solid and movements, but we will not claim power tomorrow, either the Dritte Weg or Nordic Resistance Movement. So now, while we are at this state, we must build this contact network, we must build this friendship, comradeship, so we could really, really, really gain from each other when one starts to grow really much and grows really much stronger than the other. And it's not just about the Dritte Weg and the Nordic Resistance Movement. Of course, we have good contact with several organizations all over the world. I was just taking these two organizations as an example because of the introduction and everything. But a strong cooperation over borders, it is crucial to our cause, because the day when we claim victory in the North, the battle is far from finished. In order to be truly free, we cannot only cut off one of the octopus arms. We must drive the spear through its head again and again and again. And firstly, when the parasite is powerless, we can celebrate our real victory. First then, we will be completely free. And in order to get there, we must stick together.
Okay, but United Nordic region then, what does it mean and why are we fighting for it?
The Nordic region, which is a hard expression on English, since I mean we have Norden on Swedish, but there are no exact good translation in English. It's often referred to as Scandinavia in the English language, but Finland is not included in Scandinavia, so that will be a wrong word for it. So I use the North, you use the Nordic region. There is no set word for it, but the Nordic countries is Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Finland, and Iceland. And all of these countries during history, we have had a lot to do with each other. The borders have been very fluid between these countries. There has always been people moving between these countries. And I mean, Finland was Swedish once not so long ago, Iceland was Danish not so long ago, and so on. The borders have been very, very fluid. So the people are very much the same, the culture are very much the same. And we definitely do have more that unites us than that departs us. There is definitely traits among all of the Nordic peoples that separates us from other European people or other people of the world. So therefore, it's quite natural, with all this being said, that we should be a united country. And it also goes hand in hand with the other things I talked about here, why we should stand together over borders and fight together, because it is a more and more globalized world. The enemy are very, very powerful today, and Sweden alone would never have a chance if we are awakening only in Sweden. We need to be several countries waking up around the same time, and this we are practicing also in the Nordic countries. Hopefully, we will get Germany and Great Britain and Russia and everyone else with us as well, but at least we must fight where we are, and that is in the Nordic countries, and aim for that. At least these countries must awake. And also, another thing about United North is that if we say that we will get totally blocked off from trading with all other nations when we claim power, then in the Nordic region, we have all resources we need to stand sustainable. We could be truly independent in the Nordic countries. We have natural defense lines if we talk military. We have production enough. We have material enough. We have food enough. We have oil. We have everything we need within the Nordic countries. As I said before, we definitely do want to trade with other countries. We definitely do want to cooperate with other countries. But in the worst case scenario, the North would be sustainable. The North could stand independent on their own. So, yeah, with that being said, it is both a practical goal. There are practical reasons for it, but it's also a visionary goal, since our people has had so much in common in the past.
But is not all this anti-nationalist thinking? Is it not against National Socialism?
Anti-nationalists, yeah, it depends on what you put in the word nationalist, of course. Anti-national socialists, definitely not. To us, the nation is the race. It is not the country or the culture in itself that is the nation, but it is the race that is the nation. It is the race that creates the culture. It is the race that makes the country what it is, not the opposite way around. And thereby, if you by nationalism mean some kind of, yeah, like Sweden, Democrats, if you mean that you are a Swede as long as you talk Swedish and as long as you share Swedish culture and are a Muslim and so on, then it could be seen as anti-nationalistic, since we want to dissolve the Swedish state and create a Nordic state instead. But if you look to true nationalism, race nationalism, ethno-nationalism, then it is nothing anti-nationalistic at all with it. And for our race to be able to survive, for us to be able to pull this through, for us to be able to stand victorious as a national socialist organization, this is a necessity. It is not possible to do this in Sweden or in Finland or in Denmark alone, as I've talked about. So therefore, it is 100% national socialist to strive for this goal.
Yes. And do you think other nationalistic organizations should think in a similar way?
Yes, definitely, because it is not possible to look in any other way. I mean, the era of nationalistic chauvinism, that is past. That belongs to the history. Today, the era of small-scale states, that is in the past. We must look at how the world looks right now, how the geopolitical situation is, how our enemies work, and how globalized everything is getting. And then it is actually nothing but naive dreaming to think that a small nation could stand up against all of this. And if you look at, for example, the Dritte Weg that we have talked about a lot in this episode, they have as one of their goals to get back the Greater Germany as it was before the Versailles Treaty. So they have about the same vision there as us, that they must have a strong nation that can stand up and be self-sufficient. And I think definitely that other European nationalist organizations should look into this as well. Maybe Spanish and Portuguese nationalists should fight for a Spanish-Portuguese nation. Maybe the Baltic states should fight together to make that into one country. So that closely racially related people, they should unite into one with their nations. I think that is the future. That is the only way that we could sustain. That is the only way that we could actually claim power and keep the power. And then when the world in a beautiful future is free at last, then maybe, if we want, we could split up again into small states. Then again, we could afford some chauvinism and...
Then we invade Denmark again and the Norwegians come
yeah, exactly.
to kill each other again.
Maybe, if that's what wanted. But for now on, we have a much, much, much bigger and a much, much more dangerous enemy on our throats than our brother at our side.
But a sensitive question that I know you answered earlier in the podcast belonging to the now banned Finnish branch of the Nordic Resistance Movement. How do we view Karelia and the Kola Peninsula? That is the Russian parts that were previously Finnish.
Yes, this is very, very delicate and sensitive questions. But as I said in that podcast interview a couple of years ago, I say again, I mean, these parts definitely, if you look at historically, belongs to the North. There is no question about it. They belong to Finland, that is a part of the North. And nowadays, however, they belong to Russia. But I mean, if we claim power tomorrow, then the next day after tomorrow, the first thing we would do would not be to declare a war against Russia to take back Karelia. That would be very, very stupid. But I do believe that as a strong Nordic nation, a self-sufficient nation, strong military force that we will be with our political goals, with every political aspect put into reality that we have in vision, I do believe that we have much, much better negotiation terms than what Finland, for example, alone has today. So It would definitely be something that we would like to strive for, to get these historical parts back to the north, but it is not something we would declare war over. But I am perfectly sure that we would be able to come to some good solution, especially if also Russia was ruled by nationalists.
And Greenland and Åland, is there a desire for the Nordic nation to be even bigger?
Yeah, of course, Greenland and Åland, they are definitely parts of the North. And about Greenland, actually, we have activism on Greenland now and then. Actually, this week, there was some struggle report from Greenland. So we have activists there as well, which is really nice. But I mean, definitely Greenland and Åland are parts of the North. There is no talk about it. Trump can talk about buying Greenland how much he wants, but Greenland is and will remain a Nordic part. I really hope so, at least. And otherwise, we have to negotiate even more to get that back, because Greenland is part of the Nordic nation, definitely. About making the Nordic nation bigger, we have actually said in some article here and there that maybe the Baltic countries could be a part of the Nordic nation as well. It is not written in stone. It is not something we have fully set in our goals right now. But who knows in the future, because also the people living in the Baltic countries are very, very, very closely related, both racially and cultural, to the Nordic countries. So it is not impossible. Who knows? But first of all, we need to look at the Nordic region as it is today.
But why not invest in a fully united Europe instead?
Yeah, as I said before, there is differences between the Nordic people and other white people. So we are part of the same major race, the white race, the European race, the Aryan race, whatever you want to name it. But still, during history, we have developed a little bit differently. We have a little bit different cultures, of course, not so big differences at it between other races, but there are differences. We have some racial differences, not so big as it is between blacks and whites, for example, but there are differences. And we want to preserve these differences. We want to preserve how our race looks. We want a multiplicity also within the white race. I want to see different white cultures bloom. I want to see the different white peoples live free and independently. And if we mix up all of Europe, then I believe that a big part of the beauty of the white race will get disappeared. It would not be as bad as if we mix up the whole world, but it will definitely be tragic and bad to see that happen. So, short answer is we are too different within our own race to do that fault. We need to preserve what's left of us and preserve the beauty and the multiplicity of the white race.
Yeah. So the EU is not something we support?
Definitely not. And maybe we'll have a full episode about EU somewhere in the future. So I will not talk so much about it now. We have had a full episode about EU in the Swedish version, Ledarperspektiv, of this podcast. But EU is, of course, not pro a strong Europe and strong white Europeans. EU is a Marxist project that wants to create one race, and not just with Europeans, but with immigration on top of that. And it is a capitalistic project to make rich people earn even more with work immigration and import between the countries and so on. So EU is not about a united and strong Europe for Europeans. EU is about making a European Soviet state, like in the old Soviet Russia, capitalists of non-Nordic ethnicity that is in the top of the pyramid. Yeah. And it's also in our 9 political points, actually, that we want to leave the European Union and similar unions.
Yes. If you live outside the North, but want your country to belong to the Nordic nation of the Nordic resistance movement, how can you fight for this?
Yeah, I have to answer the classic answer. I think I've said it in every episode so far, so I will keep on doing so. Join your local national socialist organization. No, but I mean, yes, if you live, for example, in the Baltic states, as we said here, and you have an organization or you join an organization and that organization really, really would like to, Latvia, for example, should belong to the Nordic countries, then build up a strong organization, take contact with us, and who knows what will happen in the future. But for now on, I think you need to fight in your own country and build up your own organization and conduct your own struggle in strong contact and in strong cooperation with us in the Nordic resistance movement, of course. And then we will see what the future has to bring on those specific questions. But now, right now, you have to fight where you stand together with your neighbors to the right and the left and do what you can to fight the globalist hydra. So, yeah, just keep on fighting. And we can also mention, as we have talked about before, that if you are in an organization today that are not in contact with the Nordic resistance movement, we are very, very happy if you take contact with us. We really want cooperation and contact with other like-minded organizations around the whole world, actually. And if you are not in an organization today, if you do not think there is a good organization in your country today, then create a new one. And also then you can contact Nordic Resistance Movement already from the start. You can get different kind of tips from us. You can get different kind of help from us on what to think of. And we will follow you along the way. We will do our best to help you not repeat the same mistakes as we did in the past, but to learn from our mistakes, to not invent the wheel again. We are more than happy to help. So, yeah, build your core, found your organization, create a name, create a symbol, gather with some good and loyal comrades, and then contact us, and we will do whatever we can to help you out.
Yes. Very good. We will, with these words and leadership perspective for tonight, and questions and suggestions on topics for future episodes of Leadership Perspective can be sent to info@nordicresistancemovement.org. We do also appreciate both negative and positive feedback. Please spread this episode on social medias and help the Nordic Resistance Movement in any way you can. And you can read more on our webpage, nordicresistancemovement.org. The next episode will come out on the 5th of November, 2020. Thanks for tonight and goodbye.
Take care, everyone. Goodbye.
Greetings! My name is Fred Leitan. I'm from Sweden and I represent the Nordic Resistance Movement. In addition to my Swedish blood, there is also Norwegian and German blood flowing through my veins. And this makes me feel a kind of kinship that I'm very proud of. The greatest thinkers have been from this part of the world, and the foremost artists have been Germans. Among the nations of Europe, the Germans have also been wartime opponents that have been feared and respected in equal measure. History remembers the Germans as a magnificent people. All the way up to 1945, when this magnificent people willingly faced an heroic fate in order to guarantee the uprising of tomorrow. They paid the blood so that their people could one day find their way back to the struggle again. Today, we are living in that tomorrow. We have not yet seen this uprising, but it's coming. A new nationalist, socialist, and revolutionary movement has emerged, ready to take on the work started by the old God.
I must admit, a few years ago, I wasn't impressed by the German movement at all. In fact, I have discounted it completely. What I saw back then was, to simplify matters, two different factions. The first faction consisting of parliamentarians, and not parliamentarians in name, but also in descent. And the second faction consisting of suspicious networks where drugs and degenerate attitudes were commonplace. Sure, there were good elements in the German movement in these two factions, but what I felt was missing, looking at the movement from an outside perspective, was an organization whose members lived for the struggle and were ready to sacrifice themselves for a higher purpose. It was their dritte Weg, and only the dritte Weg, that changed my opinion on the German movement and made me look upon the German movement with optimism and hope once again. And what I saw was a movement consisting of sound individuals who were dedicated to the struggle. Because the struggle is the most important thing of all. This was understood by the old God, and that is why they succeeded in awakening the people. You can have skillful politicians, good debaters, the correct ideology or politics on your side, but you also need the fighters. Without the struggle, we will never achieve victory. We are therefore honored to have the Dritte Weg as our comrades. It is of immense importance that we, as well as the likes of us who choose the path of struggle, cooperate. We must make the nationalist movements around the world accept their way, because neither our peoples nor our race will survive without it. There are no shortcuts. Our enemy is cooperating across nature boundaries, and so must we. Because if one people revolts while the rest of Europe doesn't, it would be very easy for NATO to send in their troops to suppress the uprising. But if 10 nations revolt at the same time, or are in the process of revolting, they will never be able to stop us. Our friendship with a movement of the struggle in Germany is therefore not only based on us wanting allies of similar mindset. It is not only based on camaraderie. A lot of it is actually based on pure mathematics. We depend on the struggle continuing all across Europe, whether in Germany, the North, or anywhere else. Cooperation and struggle are key words. Movements of the struggle must work together, benefit from another, learn from another, help one another grow and become better, and make sure that those who want to take shortcuts lose influence. The sooner this happens, the better. The movement in Germany has made leaps and bounds forward in just the last few years. What we see is a revolutionary force on the rise. And it fills me and many other people with hope for the future. Deutsche Kameraden, ich schaue mit großem Vertrauen auf den Kampf, den ihr führt, und der Weg, den ihr heute geht, bestätigt mich, dass ihr die Kraft sein werdet, die Völkischernebung des nächsten Morgens möglich machen will. Lasst euch nicht unterkriegen von der scheinbaren Überlegenheit unseres Gegners. Seid doch sicher, wenn euch ein unterdrückerisches, korruptes und kriminelles System verfolgt, ihr von Feinden, von inneren und äußeren, ungebeten seid, die Stärke liegt in eurem Blut. Euer Blut ist eure stärkste Waffe, denn dort leben die Götter. Und wenn ihr diese wieder wegbekommt, ist der Sieg unser. Die alten Kämpfer erwecken die Götter, und als die verschwanden, schliefen die Götter weiter an. Aber dort schlafen sich noch immer. Sie warten von uns, neu erweckt zu werden. Und wenn dies passiert, sind wir unaufhaltsam. Was wir jetzt brauchen, ist eine revolutionäre Kraft aus Kämpfen, die das Zeug haben, das zu tun, was nötig ist. Denn der Sieg wird nicht durch schöne Worte oder auf Abkürzungen gewonnen. Wir sind die Wege des Feiglings. Er wird durch Opfer unser Wille gewonnen und bezahlt durch Blut, damals wie heute. Kameraden, seid ihr diese revolutionäre Kraft, die diese völkische Erregung garantieren will? Seid ihr bereit, zu opfern, zu kämpfen? Und wenn nötig, den Preis für den Sieg im Blut so hart zu zahlen. Ja! Der Kampf führt uns auf den direkten Weg. Und durch den Kampf, der Sieg wird unser sein. Dankeschön.
Frederick, it's a big honor for us to have you here today as a representative of the Nordic Resistance Movement. It's a big honor for us that your comrade in Sweden, in Scandinavia, is on our side on the fight for free countries. And it's very nice to see that you come here on your birthday. Wir freuen uns natürlich. Es ist eine große Ehre für uns, dass ein Vertreter der nordischen Widerstandsbewegung heute hier